At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
People who met their heroes only to be disappointed. What's your story? Story 1. My husband will not tell this story because he is a passive and kind person. But I am not. I am still really upset about it, and I know he is too. A couple of months ago, my local public library announced that they were bringing Bill Nye to the city to talk about his books, and I thought, oh no, not Bill Nye. I know, I bought tickets right away. It was not an abnormal reaction, but for me, it was special. It was a gift for my husband. He grew up in a fundamentalist Lutheran home and attended a Lutheran school from kindergarten through eighth grade. Unlike public schools in our childhood, Bill Nye was not a regular feature in his classrooms. He had to try to watch from home, and when Bill talked about evolution or anything even mildly challenging to religion, my husband was told, "That's not real," or he would be shut off. My husband went on to pursue a degree in the sciences during college while still fondly remembering his childhood and parents. They were loving, exceptional people, and being a kind man of reason. My husband could separate beliefs from unconditional familial love. He wants to make the world a better place. Since his early 20s, he has lamented that he has not done anything great yet. He has not changed the world for the better or invented anything life-saving. When he was looking for a career using his degree in physics, he chose the solar industry. His dream job had been aeronautical engineering, but the requirements for time in the field were far too extensive for a fresh college graduate. He has worked in solar energy for 3 years now and is doing his part to help save the planet. I know some people think climate change is a hoax, but he understands that his work is a small part of a very big industry. He is very good at what he does, and I am proud of him. He is not prideful and wishes he could do more, but he is happy to contribute. Naturally, I was thrilled to surprise him with tickets to see his childhood hero speak about the importance of the work he is doing. I thought it would bring him peace and comfort. The week before the talk, I searched everywhere for Bill's books, but could not find any locally. On the day of the talk, I finally found one about 45 minutes away at a Books-A-Million. I drove there while my husband was at work and surprised him with it when he came home. That night, we went, book in hand, to see Bill Nye. I could see the excitement on my husband's face. He is usually calm and quiet, so seeing him animated made me feel positively giddy. A huge crowd had turned up to see Bill. The place was packed, every seat full, tickets sold out, and every last book for sale gone. I was thankful to have bought one earlier. My husband's mom called before the talk began. When he explained where we were, she said in a loving but disapproving tone, "I'll pray for you." When Bill walked out, the crowd roared. We all chanted, "Bill, Bill, Bill, Bill," and at one point, after the cheering settled, someone in the back shouted, "Science rules!" The crowd went wild again. Bill, clearly humbled and excited, laughed and said, "I love that song." Then his talk began. He had an amazing stage presence, warm, funny, and genuine. He was the science guy we had known and loved as kids. He talked about climate change and encouraged us to do our part. He said the youth had always been his target audience and that he hoped they would hear him and grow up to do great things. I glanced at my husband and nudged him. He smiled and shook his head. After the talk, there was a book signing. While questions went on, I got up and grabbed us a spot in line so my husband could stay and listen to Bill's answers. When the auditorium let out, I was glad to have gotten in line early. The line seemed to go on forever behind me. My husband came out and found me, and we waited with our book open to the correct page for signing. The line moved quickly. No pictures were allowed. Books had to be open, and no personalization was permitted. Security guards helped anyone who needed assistance finding the right page. We knew there would probably be little time for chatting and understood that the setup was meant to make the signing move smoothly. Bill had a great turnout and loads of fans, so it made sense that they wanted the line to keep moving. When we finally reached the table, we handed over our book. My quiet, respectful, and kind husband said, I just would like to thank you, Bill. You've made a huge impact in my life. Bill waved a hand without looking up and said, Yeah, yeah, here you go. Appalled, I tried to interject. It's just that, well, you inspired him. It's okay, babe. You're in the right place. My husband said. Bill shrugged, still not really making eye contact, and skeptically said, Oh yeah, Toledo, Ohio. At that point, we walked away. I could see the disappointment on my husband's face, but I was too determined to have a good night. I said, Well, did you have a good time? How were the questions? He shrugged and said, Oh yeah, thanks for the tickets and the book. It was nice. The questions were okay. I wish he had more time to talk about some of the more ethical dilemmas. We were sad. It wasn't until we got into the car that I said, I'm really sorry he brushed you off like that, babe. You didn't deserve to be treated like that. My husband replied, Well, he's an engineer, not a celebrity. Most engineers have a hard time socializing. It's okay, but I could tell he was a bit heartbroken. Of course, what my husband said is true. Bill is an engineer, a man of science, definitely not a celebrity. We had expected him to move us along quickly, and every sign indicated that the book signing would not be a deeply personal experience. But still, I stand by the fact that, as a man who says the youth is his target audience, Bill could have looked one of the adults he inspired as a child in the eye. He could have said, Thank you, and that would have been enough. Instead, it took longer and more conversation to not only brush us off, but also to make a joke about the city we live in. I do not think engineers are inherently incapable of conversation, especially not Bill, though I hear that stereotype joked about a lot. We try to look back on it fondly. A week or so ago, I said to my husband, You know, that still really bothers me. His response? Well, you should never meet your heroes. It was very sad. We still love him, though. Before we continue, do us a quick favor. Smash that like button and subscribe to support our channel. Story 2. When I was in high school, my best friend, his older sister, and I met Adrian Peterson, the future Hall of Fame running back for the Minnesota Vikings, and it sucked. We happened to be walking into a mall in the suburbs of Minneapolis at the same time, and he was walking right in front of us. My buddy and I got excited, and I made eye contact, so I knew he recognized us. But before we could say, Hey, Mr. Peterson, big fans, he held the door open for my friend's sister, checked her out, whistled, and closed the door right in my friend and my faces. I didn't even want to say anything to him after that. This was 6 or 7 years ago, and I'm still salty about it. On the other hand, I met Bo Burnham after a show in Iowa City, Iowa, and he was great. He was willing to chat with any and all fans, genuinely thanked everyone for being there, and signed my ticket and took a photo with me for free. This was on his Bo Burnham live tour. I've made a point to see him on both of his subsequent tours and would gladly pay to see him on any future tours as well. Story 3. I was dying to meet Jason Momoa and finally got the chance at an after party for an indie movie he was in. It was a small venue in Los Angeles with some bands playing. Jason walked in and a few people started talking to him. Once they passed, I bought a beer and approached him. I offered him the beer and asked how his night was. He looked kind of drunk and just pounded the beer without saying anything. Unsure what to make of it, I got more to the point and asked if it would be cool to get a picture. He leaned into my face and said, Tonight isn't about that. Tonight is about me, and walked away. Not even 5 minutes later, he was taking pictures with other people across the venue and signing autographs. Aquaman owes me a beer, damn it. Story 4. Not my hero, but my mom's hero. She's in love with Jon Bon Jovi. A few years back, she accidentally bumped into him in public and said, Oh, I'm so sorry, before realizing who he was. His response, You should be, like, what man? An older lady bumps into you accidentally, and that's your response? It didn't change her love for him, but it definitely left me sour. I've heard other stories of him being generally rude since, and that remains my favorite. Another story about him. A friend of mine worked in a position where he saw Bon Jovi a few times a week. At the end of every interaction, my friend would say, Have a nice day, like he did with everyone. Bon Jovi got increasingly sour each time, and it took him months to realize my friend wasn't mocking him. It was because of that song and album of the same name. On the other hand, Literally, everyone I know who has bumped into Bruce Springsteen when he's not on tour says he's the nicest guy ever. The contrast is wild. A huge percentage of people here are crazy for Springsteen, and most would never dream of bothering him in public, likely because he's so genuinely kind. Story 5. Years ago, my chemistry teacher attended a science Olympiad convention in Chicago. He stayed on the top floor of a hotel. As he was traveling down in the elevator, in walked Bill Nye. My teacher, wearing his Sci Loli shirt and practically screaming, "I am science," was about to say, "Uh-oh, you're Bill Nye," when Nye doubled shushed him. My teacher spent the entire elevator ride in awkward silence. To this day, whenever a kid asks if Bill Nye is still alive, he jokingly insists that he isn't. Bill Nye is a celebrity and probably was having a bad day. We've all had them. I also understand why many think he's wasting his time debating climate change deniers. I think he isn't, for two reasons. One, he spreads awareness to those who do not believe in climate change, and two, he may potentially convince third-party observers of its existence. Story 6. I waited in line for over 45 minutes to meet the pro motocross racer I had looked up to as an aspiring teen. I'll name drop. It was Dean Wilson, a Scottish-Canadian kid, talented beyond belief. At my home track in Washougal, Washington, the line was long. I absolutely idolized this guy and his riding, and I wanted to model a lot of myself after him. Finally, I got to the front of the line, just one person ahead of me, when they suddenly took off after an autograph, picture, and handshake. I stepped forward to meet Dean, and his agent approached, standing between us. To my dismay, the agent said there was no more time for fans. There was no one else behind me. Then a petite, blonde, attractive, and excited girl came running up. She stepped in front of me just as Dean put on his hat and sunglasses, yelling, "Oh my goodness, Dean, you're incredible!" The agent checked visually with Dean. I stood there disappointed as Dean went to grab a t-shirt and his motocross goggles hanging off the side of a chair near the bike manufacturer's truck. He hustled back to meet her and gave her the gifts. She hugged him, and they began a loud conversation. The agent looked at me and said, "You can go now." I walked away in a frustrated fury, holding back small, tearful eyes and anger. I skated through the pits, late heading back to meet my ride, about 15 minutes walk away. I passed the American Honda tent. No bikes, no mats, that bikes and moto stands go on. Just a few wooden autograph chairs sitting randomly under the tent alongside their large truck. Still disappointed and irritated, I stared at the grass about 20 or 30 feet to my right before shifting my gaze back to the green right below me. I heard a voice call out to me, though I hadn't noticed any footsteps. The pro races were completely over and should have ended a while ago. "Hey, buddy, how's it going?" the voice said. "Seething," I said. Waited in line like an hour or something to meet Dean Wilson, but he's foolish, and some girl with curves impressed him and the lady that worked for him more than me. I was the only one left that wanted to talk to him, not looking in any direction but away from everything to hide my watery eyes. "Well, I'm sorry, man, that happens with people sometimes, and Dean is kind of a dong, too," the male voice told me. I responded, "Yeah, how did you even know?" He told me, "I ride with him sometimes and see him every week. You just get to know people after a while." Confused, I slowly turned my head and stretched my shoulders toward the voice, coming from my left, and it was American Honda sponsored at the time, factory rider, and one of my biggest role models, number 29, Andrew Short. I was at a loss for words, which was ironic since I had just been upset and talking to him unknowingly anyway. I tried to speak, but nothing came out, just light air and barely audible crackling from my throat. I was completely shocked and breathless. "Well, it was good talking to you. Sorry about Dean, but we have to start packing up for the next national. You want a jersey and a water or something to drink?" I dumbly nodded, still amazed. We chatted for a few more seconds before he invited me onto the truck. He gave me an energy drink can like the ones they drink on the podium, though you couldn't tell the difference from a few feet away, along with a few other great gifts, and shook my hand. Andrew will forever be a top-notch human to me. I have idolized him regardless of his career success since long before that moment. I went back to the truck with my driving party, to everyone's disbelief and slight dismay for missing out. "I thought you wanted to meet Dean Wilson, dude," one of my buddies exclaimed. "I did," was all I responded with. Story 7. I ran into Ben Roethlisberger one time in Ohio. At first I thought it was strange, but later I learned he is from Ohio and was most likely visiting family. My sister and I stopped at a huge grocery store called Jungle Jim's. We were walking around looking for some Ritz crackers when I noticed him. From the side, I wasn't sure it was Ben, but he was huge. I kept glancing over, and eventually he turned my way. I could see a Steelers logo on his cap. He started walking toward us with a woman I guessed was his wife. As he got closer, he made eye contact, and I smiled, saying, "Hey Ben, how are you doing?" He smiled back and said something like, "Doing good, just doing some shopping." I nodded and could only manage, "Well, hey, good luck next season." He said, "Thanks, man," and kept walking. It was brief, but he came across as genuinely nice and pleasant. After grabbing our crackers, my sister and I moved to the next aisle, and there was Ben coming down the aisle on the other side. This time, I just smiled and kept walking. I felt like I was passing up some kind of opportunity. I had already talked to him, but it's not every day you see an NFL quarterback casually browsing the store. We walked to the next aisle, waiting for Ben and his wife to turn the corner. But they didn't. We went to the end of the aisle, and there he was against the back wall, looking at the frozen meat and just picking up a frozen chicken. Right after he picked it up, I said, "Hey, Ben." He turned and looked at me, still holding the chicken in his giant hands. I held up my arms with open hands and said, "Hit me." He laughed, shook his head, and continued reading the label. I walked a little closer, arms still raised, and got about 10 feet away. "Come on, Ben, I'm open," I said. He looked at me again, then glanced around as if it were some kind of joke, but I was determined, so I kept staring at him. He finally looked into my eyes, and I gave him an encouraging nod and smile. Then he flipped his shoulders toward me and tossed the chicken underhand. Sure, I dropped it, but he was still the wuss for tossing it underhand. By the time I picked up the frozen chicken, I looked up, and he had already grabbed another chicken, put it in their cart, and started walking the other way. I shouted, "Is that all you got?" and threw the chicken, expecting them to turn around and catch it. Instead, it hit them. I thought it would hurt because the chicken was frozen solid, but they did not even flinch. They stopped walking and turned around slowly, their face completely straight, no anger, no reaction. What happened next was absurd. They picked up their entire shopping cart and tossed it. I managed to dodge it, but it knocked over my sister. I screamed and cried, and the whole scene became a chaotic blur until the store staff arrived. He had already run off. The cops came and agreed to check the security tape, but when they went upstairs, the recorder had been smashed to pieces. They said there was no evidence of what happened, but I know in my heart exactly what went down. Even though I'll never see the him face consequences, I can't help smiling every time the local sports team has a rough season. Story 8. My grandma was a casino dealer and once met Michael Jordan. It turns out he's a total jerk. She said he was playing at the high limit tables and didn't tip a dime to the cocktail waitress, the dealer, my grandma, or anyone else who served him. When someone asked him about it, he said something like, "No one helped me when I was coming up, so I don't help others." It wasn't just the lack of tipping, it was the attitude behind it that made him seem so unpleasant. On the other hand, my grandma also met Ludacris and said he was a very nice guy. He was gracious, stopped to talk to people, and was a great tipper, though she wasn't his dealer. Edit. Addressing the whole tipping thing. It's not really the tipping itself that made me think Michael Jordan was a jerk. It's the attitude behind it. His reasoning of, "Why should I help others if no one helped me?" is what made him come across as unpleasant. Story 9. I've met Joel Ortiz, Crooked Eye, Raekwon, Yo Gotti, Terminology, Ghostface Killa, Royce da5'9", Sheik Louch, MGK, R.A. the Rugged Man, and a few other rappers. I met Crooked Eye at a show that was an after-party for a daytime event in Calgary. He was super dope and gave shout-outs to the performers he enjoyed, which was cool since the levels of notoriety local Alberta rappers versus him were so different. The show ended at midnight, and my four friends and I ended up sitting with him at his table, drinking his entire bottle of Goose with him. He was animated and extremely friendly. Toward the end of the bottle, he told us that having the right woman in your life can change your trajectory. That really stuck with me. I met Ghostface Killa at a festival in Edmonton. He seemed on high guard and overwhelmed by the number of people, since the space allowed people to approach from about 270 degrees around. There were hundreds of people in a 50-foot radius. He wasn't doing photos because there were thousands of people in attendance, but since my friend had a sales booth that I was working at, we got to take pictures. For a split second, he seemed to genuinely connect when we spoke to him, letting us retake a few shots from different angles. I don't think anyone else there would have gotten much of his time, but he was cool and genuine in the moment we spent with him. I was at a terminology show in Toronto at a venue my friend regularly performed at and opened for other acts, so I knew the layout well. I asked if I could meet him, and the bouncer said no, he wasn't meeting anyone tonight. I waited until his set was done. I told the bouncer I needed to grab something for my performer friend, and he let me into the back. There, I caught Term coming off stage. He was a little surprised, much shorter than I expected, and totally cool. T signed my show poster, took a picture, and listened to my drunken rambling. Even though he had asked for no fans and I caught him off guard, he was very cool about it. I was in Vancouver, selling merch for my touring friends. We were in a small venue with room for only one merch booth. Knowing there were lots of performers, we came early to secure a table and wall space. After we set up, I was sitting there when some guy who I assumed was a fan came up and asked, "Are you selling RA the Rugged Man gear?" Not the first person to ask. I replied, "No, I only have Doom Squad and Mercury stuff." He walked away. Later, when RA was on stage, he said, "Vancouver, you guys are awesome, but screw off to that jerk who wouldn't sell my stuff at the merch booth." At that point, I was thinking, what the heck is he talking about? Then I saw the head promoter go talk to someone, the guy who had asked if I was selling RA's merch, who pointed at me. The promoter came up furious, asking why I hadn't sold his stuff. I explained that we had made space to sell it and planned to, but no one had brought me any. I had asked my group, and they thought he was traveling alone, so nothing had been delivered. We ended up getting a warning, one more strike and we couldn't perform there again. This was important since it was a key venue for hip-hop in Vancouver. RA came into the green room, saw all of us partying, and basically sat in a corner for the rest of the night. He didn't exactly have the same energy when there was no crowd cheering for him. Edit, I still have my Flight 2013s, with the right one signed by Crooked Eye. Story 10, more like never meet your villains. I went to a Comic-Con where both Thor and Loki were present. I got a photo op with each individually and one with both together. With Chris Hemsworth, you could tell he was tired, possibly from jet lag, but he was trying interacting with everyone, giving hugs and doing fun poses. Then came the group photo with both, and as we approached the booth, we were all personally warned, no touching, no hugging, no kissing, no handshakes. I was confused why handshakes weren't allowed. Maybe because the line was long and they wanted to rush through it. Then came the solo photo with Tom Hiddleston, and I got the same warning. His line wasn't busy because they capped the ticket limit, so it was annoying to have spent $400 to meet someone for 12 seconds and not even be allowed a handshake or a proper greeting. Chris Hemsworth's photo was only $80 and definitely value for money. On a side note, the best person at that Comic-Con was John Cena. He spent at least 2 hours meeting fans. His line wasn't long because of the ticket limit, but he spent a good 5 minutes with everyone. When I admitted I only knew him as a celebrity and not properly as a wrestler, he thanked me for my support. He didn't care about talking about himself. He genuinely wanted to have a conversation. Story 11. I used to do some music production for a buddy at a studio/entertainment company in Toronto. He was friends with Deadmau5's family, his mom, brother, and Joel himself, but mostly his mom. The guy hooked me up with all-access VIP-type bracelets to the Veld Festival around 2013, which allowed me and a girl I brought, who also friend-zoned the screw out of me, to basically go and do whatever we wanted. Later in the evening, near the end of Deadmau5's set, my buddy took me and the girl backstage to his trailer. There were picnic tables, and his whole family was there. Mom, brother, sister, dad, some cousins, and even his good friend Steve Duda, with whom I had a great conversation. He was telling me about Cthulhu, his new software he was about to release. There was a bunch of pizza, and we were all chilling, waiting for Joel, Deadmau5, to finish his set and come back to hang out. My buddy, the girl, and I were told specifically not to talk to Joel unless he spoke to us, which we respected. Everyone else there was aware of the rule and followed it, even his family. When the set finished, Joel came back and went straight to his trailer. He sat in the doorway, smoked like 5 or 6 cigarettes in a row, then came and sat right across from me, eating pizza and talking with his dad. It was strange because no one was talking to him unless he initiated it. We were told the festival was very stressful for him, and any extra unnecessary interaction wasn't what he needed, so we respected that. So there I was, sitting directly across from one of my musical idols, someone I've followed since the beginning of his career. I had listened to probably everything he'd ever released, and watched every interview and YouTube in-studio video I could find. And I wasn't even allowed to say hello or congratulate him on the festival going so well. Nothing. I didn't even make eye contact. Tacko Knuckles even bumped accidentally while reaching for pizza from the same box, but out of respect for what his mom told us, I didn't say excuse me or sorry. I didn't know how he might react or what his mental state was, so I chose not to risk it. I get it. First year of Veld, huge festival, just finished a set. You have the right to decompress. Plus, you don't even know me or the girl who is friend-zoning me. Yet here we were, sitting among his family and close friends, sharing pizza. The funniest part was that there were a couple of other guys there that Joel didn't know. One of them had apparently designed a small piece of jewelry for him, a necklace, I believe. The family decided to prank him by telling the guy to go over to Joel, who had by now left the picnic tables and returned to his trailer to smoke in the doorway alone, and explain that he was the one who made the necklace. The guy finally got enough courage to go over. We all watched as he awkwardly tried to say hello and explain the necklace. Joel just stared forward, smoking as if he wasn't even there. Everyone at the picnic tables was laughing like crazy, as if they'd played this prank before, knowing Joel's demeanor around people he'd never met. It was simultaneously hilarious and painful to watch someone try to introduce themselves to someone who didn't even seem to notice. Overall, it was a great night, though I can't technically say I met one of my heroes, since I wasn't even allowed to speak to him. It was still an amazing experience. His family was really cool, especially his mom, who is joyful, kind, and genuinely interested in people and their stories. Story 12. I was at a show in a little dive near downtown Houston. 3 bands played that night, and I'd come to see the third, who I was a huge fan of at the time. The first band on stage, though, was Andrew W.K. If you've never heard of him, think of loud guitars, inexplicable but great piano, and the word party somewhere in the song about every 10 seconds. That's him. Great guy, great show. By the end, I think he dragged about 15 crowd members up on stage with his 6-person band to headbang, rock out, and basically turn the set into a giant impromptu party. My girlfriend at the time, like at least half the crowd, was completely unprepared for this, but totally blown away. She begged me to get a poster signed, since he was in the back room doing autographs. I managed to grab a giant poster about 3 feet by 4 feet and headed back there. The room was packed to the door, especially since the second band had been awful. I settled into the press of people, inching forward whenever I could. One by one, Andrew signed the giant posters, often adding paragraphs, drawings, or just gigantic scrawled autographs, making each person's day as he went. He was signing back there, but of course that meant it was going to take forever to get to him. I waited in that mob throughout the second set, through the break between bands, and through the entire third set, the band I'd come to see. I tried to enjoy it, but the sound quality from the crap speakers in the room and through the small door into the back wasn't much better than the album. I finally pushed my way through the crowd and got the autograph for my girlfriend. A quote about inspiration, following your dreams, and partying pretty much every second you're awake, as I recall. And made my way back to the door at least 20 or 30 minutes after the set I'd been hyped about for 3 weeks had ended. When I got back to the table, my girlfriend was excited to see me and the poster, but looked a bit disappointed. When I asked what the hell, she quickly explained. It wasn't about the poster. It was about something that happened while I was in line. I'd missed my then-favorite band, never even saw them on stage, and had no idea what they looked like. My girlfriend, knowing how much I'd wanted to see them, caught the lead singer on his way to their merch table and basically dragged him over to the backroom door, hoping he could say hello or shake my hand to make up for me missing the set. She pointed me out to him. I'm not particularly attractive, but I'm easy to recognize in a crowd, and I begged him to at least do something, say hi or something. He looked her dead in the eye and said, "Screw off, I saw that guy in the crowd, bish bugger off," and shoved her away. I wouldn't have believed it if our friends hadn't corroborated the story. I lost as much respect for that band and the singer in particular that night as I gained for Andrew W.K., who is an all-around great guy and a hell of a showman. Years later, that singer came up in the news again. I'd already known he was unpleasant, but I had no idea how truly awful he was. The band was Lost Prophets, and the singer in question was Ian Watkins. Wikipedia gives more details, but it's still fairly NSFW. Screw that guy with a burning Christmas tree. Story 13. My best friend's mom was who I wanted to grow up to be. As soon as I met her, independent, artistic, and competent. She did home improvement, carpentry, roofing, painting, and sculpture. She was open-minded, welcoming, and exuded confidence and creativity. They moved away suddenly. I lost touch with my friend, and she became a memory, an adult who had a significant positive influence on my life during a turbulent time. 15 years later, I found her on Facebook. She was still an artist and now lived on the other side of the country. I reached out on a whim just to say I was thankful for her influence and how much I looked up to her as an artist, especially since I had gone into painting and graphic design myself. Her response was unexpected. She told me she was looking for an apprentice to help in her shop and work on big projects with her, and after seeing my work, she thought I would be a great fit. We chatted for a couple of months, and I dropped my life to come work with her. From day one, it was tense and strange. Small comments and jokes she made slowly turned into revelations about her beliefs and ideology. By day three, she was openly sharing that not only are there three types of aliens visiting Earth, but they talk to her in her dreams, that her deceased mother has been her psychic companion since 1999, whispering spiritual insight about the people around her, that all illness can be treated with essential oils and colloidal silver, that the Archangel Gabriel watches over her, and so on. I've known some very out there people, and I believe some odd things myself, but her absolute certainty allowed no discussion. When it came up in conversation that I had been essayed, her response was that my reincarnated soul obviously had something to learn from the experience, and that was why I had chosen my parents and opted to be abused before I was born. When I expressed concerns that her business plans were not as sincere or thought out as our summer conversations had led me to believe, she assured me that the psychic she had consulted before my arrival had foreseen great success and profit. She asked if I believed in souls and took my response that I don't as a personal attack, launching into an hour-long lecture about a dream she had. In the dream, she saw a woman's name, and weeks later, the name turned out to belong to a deceased relative's friend, which she claimed proved the existence of souls and telepathy. She made a lot of snap judgments and devised secret tests of my character, lecturing me on failing them. For example, when she told me to pick any movie I wanted, I chose I Am Legend. According to her, this proved I was an inconsiderate monster with morbid tastes for violence. I stayed as calm and diplomatic as I could during my very short stay, but it became increasingly difficult as she grew more hostile. It was obvious that my skills as an artist were far more advanced than hers, and she awkwardly sought random reasons to criticize me. She blamed my dark energy for making her physically ill for a day. She called me masculine for casually getting along with men who, in her opinion, are impossible to work with because they make everything about physical relations, and said we were having trouble getting along because I didn't respect my mother. The whole experience was a letdown. I learned a lot about vetting potential business partners, and I would have regretted it for the rest of my life if I hadn't gone. But discovering that my childhood idol was a hypocritical, New Age equivalent of a fundamentalist with little sense of logic was painful. Story 14. When I was in second grade, I thought Bob Feller, the pitcher from the Indians, was the greatest thing ever. I read about him constantly. When Cleveland opened its new Jacobs Field Stadium, he was there signing autographs all day. I went to the exhibition game with my dad. Around 10 p.m., we were walking to our car in the lot when my dad noticed Bob Feller about 10 feet away walking with someone. He asked, "Do you want to ask him for an autograph?" So I went over, this tiny little white-haired blonde girl, and said, "Excuse me, Mr. Feller, can I have your autograph?" He turned to me and said, "Damn it, no. I've been signing autographs all day. I'm not signing another one. Jesus Christ." I didn't know what to do, so I froze and walked back to my dad, teary-eyed. He was so sad because he knew Feller was my hero. He took the paper from me and said, "Mr. Feller, would you reconsider? She's 8. She reads about you every night. You're her hero." Feller grumbled, "Give me the damn paper." Signed quickly, and my dad thanked him and walked back to give it to me. He said, "Here, honey." Accidentally loud enough for Feller to hear, I said, "I don't want it anymore." After telling this story here and there, I found out he apparently had a reputation for being constantly nasty. Story 15. One of my earliest memories was meeting Batman. I was probably 3 or 4, and I remember my mom taking me to this big event. It was crazy and awesome. The Batmobile was there, and we got to sit in it. I even had a picture of Batman and Robin signed. Best day ever! I'm 30 now, and I recently brought it up to my mom. I asked where we went that day. She explained it was just a local grocery store promotion. Batman and Robin were actually some older, overweight guys with a beat-up old Corvette that had cardboard mods attached. Apparently, it was a pretty embarrassing display. I always remembered how amazing that day was, but now knowing the truth kind of ruined it. Story 16. I worked at an airport Starbucks in a major city that people love to visit, Miami. So I got to meet a lot of celebrities. Many were really sweet. Sean Paul, Daddy Yankee. He was totally fine taking pictures with everyone in the terminal, signing autographs, and even spent about 15 minutes talking to the old janitor who recognized him. He flirted with our resident older employee too, apparently the best guy in the world. Pitbull, A-Rod, the little Latina girl from Fifth Harmony who did that song that changed the chorus from Fastballs the Way, Lady Gaga, Sia, Kanye, and Nicki Minaj, who apparently still goes to dance clubs and talks to patrons. All of them were great. But according to old co-workers, some folks were straight-up dongs. OBJ, Pogba, Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez, and Drake. They were really rude in line, and their bodyguards weren't any better. I also met Alan Hearns at the elementary school I worked at. My cousin was on staff. He brought presents for the kids and new school supplies for everyone, including 700 backpacks with corresponding materials. Lamar Miller helped him with the delivery. I've met Dwayne The Rock twice, once at the airport and once on set. My cousin did security for him on set, I think. On set, he was a total prima donna. No one, not even the bodyguards, could be within 20 feet. You couldn't even look at him. He did select one person for autographs, which was nice, generally the hottest woman there, but as a customer, The Rock was very chill in public. He loved talking about the University of Miami days. Ray Lewis is apparently like this too. If you want stories about Warren Sapp, Ray Lewis, Michael Irvin, and others, I can also check with an old co-worker who may or may not have been a groupie for the U-Squads of the 80s and early 90s. We're still not sure. One of my old customers was also the running backs coach for a long time, so I have stories about Frank Gore, Willis McGahee, and Clinton Portis, too. I can also ask the aforementioned cousin. He has stories, too, including Donald Trump, the championship-winning Miami Heat squads, the Marlins, Dan Marino, and The Rock, as I mentioned. I've told the Trump story before, but I can tell it again. Dude is basically a normal guy who hates golf but has to golf for appearances. He's probably an introvert with a big name, unsure what to do about it, and probably just wants to stay home and watch TV. Also, he lets people ride in his chopper. My last story is May Day Parade. My friend is obsessed, so we waited until after the show to get autographs. Even after 10 years, the band still hangs out by the bus to give autographs and talk to fans. They are really cool, major props. Oh, and Brett Dalton, the last time I saw him at a con, did not seem to want to be there. I felt bad even asking for an autograph. Also, I immediately judge any celebrity who has a no photos sign at one. Just what? Others I've met include Kumail Nanjiani, an alumnus who shared an advisor with me in school. I even interviewed him for a local paper. Kumail is the best and deserves his success. I've also met Willem Dafoe, LaMarcus Joyner, Teddy Bridgewater, Amari Cooper, and the 2010-ish Aquinas squad with Gio Bernard and Geno Atkins. Various people I knew in high school, like the new anchor in local news, and a former Miss Florida who came to me while high on stuffs. Story 17. This one happened not too long ago, just last year actually. I ran away from home. The story goes like this. My mom had an old colleague reach out, saying she needed her folks driven to and from a hospital every day at a set time. I was getting paid under the table, of course. I did this for several weeks until I had managed to save well over $2,000. Flash forward to me secretly planning my escape. I hopped on the first bus out of the state and headed 5 to 6 states away. Part of my plan was to start a new life with what little I had left after bus tickets and food expenses. I went to meet a guy named Olin Rogers. For some reason, naive old me thought he'd be the kind of person to help another guy out. And for what little he could do, he did. I told him my story, how I had left home, and his quip, "There will be people that will say you can't make a living out of something you love to do, but are you really living by not doing it?" really resonated with me. It resonated so much that I even bought a limited-time-only poster when it came on sale. I had told him that my parents were one of the major causes of my mental struggles. At the time, Olin Rogers was just starting out on YouTube, and not many people knew about him, but enough that even my friends had heard of him. When I saw that quote, I thought, this is a guy who's got his whole life together. Someone who started from nothing, grew up in Memphis, a city known for its crime, and worked his way out, built himself a better life. For a moment, I wanted that too, that sense of financial stability and self-security, knowing I earned what I worked hard for. So when I went to see him, I was expecting some massive revelation. Nope. What did I get instead? Talk to your parents. I'm sure they'll understand. It's better to talk these things out and explain what you're going through. I really took that to heart. I figured since he was older, he obviously had more experience and knew things I didn't. I was saddened to find out that his advice didn't exactly hold up. My parents are still as toxic as ever, and now I'm just trying to work my way up so I can become independent myself. When the time comes, I'll pay back all the money I've owed my parents since my conception. That way, I don't have to live with the guilt of knowing I'm drowning in debt. Story 18. I've been a Giants fan since I was a kid. My dad was a Giants fan, so I wound up one too. This was right after Super Bowl 42, when they had that insane comeback halfway through the season and beat the previously undefeated New England Patriots. Eli Manning was signing autographs at a local mall sporting goods store. I was insanely excited and wanted his signature on a jersey and a football I already owned. I went with both items and bought autograph tickets for each $500, $500 to have him sign two items I already owned. I was pissed, but okay. I wanted his signature. I waited in line for 3 hours. When I was about 15 minutes away from him, security announced that Eli would not be taking pictures with anyone. People could have others take pictures of them standing across the table, but they only had as much time as it took him to sign their item. If he finished signing before the picture was done, they had to leave. He also wouldn't let anyone stand next to him or pose for pictures with their items, just across the table. People in line who had already paid for autograph tickets were told that Eli wouldn't be signing certain items because they weren't approved. One guy had 3 custom-made helmets. One was half New York Giants and half Patriots with Brady's signature on the Patriots side. Another was half New York Giants and half Ole Miss. And the third was half Colts signed by Peyton Manning and half New York Giants. He was told that the only helmet Eli would sign was the New York Giants Ole Miss one. He asked, "Why didn't you tell me that before I bought the autograph tickets? Will I get a refund?" The response was, "Not our issue. You must take it up with the event organizer." I finally got up, had my two items signed, and said, "Thank you very much. I've been a Giants fan forever. It was a pleasure meeting you. I appreciate it, and keep up the good work." I reached out to shake his hand, and he stared at me as if I had just insulted his family and grunted. Honestly, I think that was the last thing I ever had autographed or any piece of autographed memorabilia I purchased. That experience completely took the wind out of my sails. I don't know if he's truly a bad person or if he was just having a bad day, but it really killed the excitement for me. Like others have said about celebrities not always being bubbly or over-the-top enthusiastic, he's a regular person who just gets paid an insane amount for playing a game. He could have been having a bad day or been completely exhausted, but for me, it was still a huge buzzkill. Story 19. I almost feel like I'm being blasphemous, but it was Dave Chappelle during his return to stand-up after his hiatus or whatever it was. I was managing an Italian restaurant downtown, and he had a show that night at the theater. He and his friend just came and sat on the patio, saying nothing. At first, no one noticed who he was because he had gained a lot of weight from working out and looked very different, but I had been watching that guy since I was 8 and knew it was him the moment I saw him. I actually had to convince his server that it was him. It was funny because people were just passing by without realizing it. I waited until they were done eating and it was time to gather their dishes so it would seem natural that I was talking to him. He was doing a great job of staying unnoticed, and I didn't want to ruin it. The first thing I noticed, holy crap, he was stoned. I try to keep that in mind now, as that might have been part of it. I came to the table and said, "Holy crap, man, I can believe you're in my restaurant. I'm a huge fan. I've been a fan since I was 8, and you did a chew in Robin Hood Men in Tights. Your show was one of my favorites ever, and your stand-up, for me, you are right up there with Lenny, Richard, and Bill Hicks." He just said, "Cool." I continued, "That's really awesome. You're doing a show here. I would have gone, but I got stuck working. Just having you here in my restaurant and getting to say hi is an awesome experience for me." He looked at me and said, "Okay." At that point, his short responses made me feel like I wasn't really wanted there, so I switched into manager mode. I asked about his food, if he wanted dessert or anything else. He said it was fine, and his friend asked for the check. I had one more thing to ask, and I was worried I might be taking it too far, but I had to say, "Dave, I hate to be that guy, but man, I'm such a fan. Would it be at all possible to get a picture with you?" He just said, "Nah, man." I humbly said I understood and apologized if I had bothered him. At that point, I was still fine with everything that had happened. I got it. I wasn't mad. Shortly after, people started recognizing him in droves. He and his friend left, and as they were walking down the square, I went out to watch them leave and get a quick smoke. That's when I saw him stop and take pictures with a few people. That stung a little. I still love the guy, though. It is what it is. Story 20. In January 2002, I was invited as a guest to a 101st Airborne reunion, as I was writing my master's thesis on the correct way to use television and movie content in the classroom. I had chosen the HBO Band of Brothers series as an example for a typical high school American history class. One of my sources was a local man I had met through the War Museum, and he invited me to come with him to the reunion. Wild Bill Gornair and Edward Babe Heffron both happened to attend. I rushed back to the hotel to get my copy of their book, Brothers in Battle, Best of Friends. I stood near their table for several minutes, waiting for a break in the conversation, then spoke up. I introduced myself, explained why I was there, and asked if they could sign my copy of the book. Bill Gornair was not pleased to be bothered by a fan and got very mad, telling me to screw off. I was super disappointed and apologized. 2 weeks later, I received a new signed copy of their book, along with a signed copy of Band of Brothers by Stephen Ambrose. Included was a letter from Ambrose, also signed by the two veterans, explaining that Bill and the other members of Easy Company were not in good moods that day because many of them had just learned that Carwood Lipton had passed away less than a month earlier. They apologized and thanked me for being understanding. This gesture from Ambrose and the two men has grown more meaningful over the years, as all three have since passed. Ambrose died less than a year after the incident. On a different note, my wife, who is a photographer, was putting together a book about wildfire rangers and smoke jumpers. She was in Wyoming with her assistant and a hired pilot, flying around a fire area taking aerial photos when the engine started overheating. The pilot managed to fly the plane back to Jackson Hole Airport and set it down safely. While the pilot was servicing and repairing the engine, They wandered around taking photos and bumped into a friendly older man who was watching his helicopter being serviced. They recognized him immediately, and my wife asked his permission to take his photo. He signed a non-commercial use release, and they spent over an hour taking pictures and chatting with him. Then she prompted him to call me on her cell phone, since I was a huge fan. Admittedly, his character is my second favorite, after Darth Vader, but it was still a huge deal for me. Story 21. I have some good stories. My dad worked at the Learjet Customer Service Center in Tucson. One day, Willie Nelson flew in, and my dad worked on his plane. When he opened a cover that hid the in-flight diagnostic system, he found a huge bag of drugs. Later, when my dad met with him, he pulled him aside and reminded him it was there. Willie was thankful, saying, "I was looking for that, but I don't ever have to look far." He gave my dad an autograph for keeping things on the down low. This was sometime around 1980. My dad also taught Rusty Wallace, the NASCAR driver, when he worked at Flight Safety International. He even invited him to dinner at our house, and Rusty accepted. Good guy, although I am an avid NASCAR hater. Through Learjet, my dad met a lot of people: Neil Diamond, Buzz Aldrin, and Neil Armstrong. As for me, I met Danny Glover and Mel Gibson when they were filming Lethal Weapon 3. The construction scenes were filmed just down the street from my house in Lancaster, California. I was there the day they filmed the scene where they threw a guy into wet concrete. We were about 200 feet away, looking over a brick wall, and without any coaxing, Danny and Mel came over, signed autographs, and chatted with about 30 of us. Good dudes. I still have the car door handle that Mel put a brick on the gas pedal and drove through the site while they were filming at the end of that movie. The car sat on the street for weeks after the crew left. My favorite person I've met was Dustin Kensrue of Thrice. They were playing a gig in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I had driven up early from Oklahoma City just to check out the venue. When I saw him walking down the street with his earphones in, I jumped out of the car in amazement. I was wearing a Thrice shirt, so he crossed the street, and I rambled on about how much of a fan I was and asked for a few pictures. He offered to sign anything, and I happened to have an album cover that he signed for me. I had met him a few years earlier when The Illusion of Safety came out, but that was the first time I had really heard them. They were outside after their set, having opened for Hot Rod Circuit. Awesome guys. My bad story. I worked with a guy who played with the drummer of the All-American Rejects. He came down and hung out with us one night. He told us how terrible the lead singer Tyson Ritter had been to them, constantly telling them they were nothing without him, and that he was the band. He was a constant problem for fans who saw him out and about. The band ended up breaking up over him. Story 22. Dave Attell. I was waiting in line to see him around the time Insomniac was still being made. He did a great show. When he saw me waiting, he yelled out, "All right, first hot girl of the line," which I took as a big compliment, since I had just put on some weight from new medication and had a shaved head I regretted. He was awesome. He let me get a picture, autographed my arm at my request, and let me run my hand over his very short hair. He even did the same to my buzzed head. I didn't get to meet him on the Antisocial Network tour, though. The line was way too long, the crowd was terrible, and he didn't look happy. I hope to see him again in better spirits, because I think he's great. Jim Norton. Nice but insincere. I imagine he was bored as hell. Bill Burr. Funny dude. On and off stage, I would gladly meet him again. Doug Stanhope. Super cool to his fans in Philly, every time I see him, except one year with a totally awful audience. Fun to chat with. Bingo is so nice. I got a few fun pics with Doug, but Bingo was running the merch stand, so no photo with the awesome girlfriend. Jim Jefferies. Very cool. Awesome show, and he let anyone who wanted a picture with him get one. Ryan Dunn. I met him at a go-kart track shortly after the first Jackass movie came out. I had been a fan since the first CKY tape and watched Jackass like a fiend. I was fangirling hard, but he was super nice. My boyfriend took a blurry picture of us with my SLR. I had it set to manual focus, oops, and I was so bummed when I got the photo developed that I tossed it. Huge oops. Bam Margera. I met him at a Bloodhound Gang show first, then a hymn show, and another Bloodhound Gang show with free tickets, I think through evil Jared Hasselhoff. At the last show, Bam hit on my girlfriend, but he was nice and polite. I met him a few times over the years, and he's always been kind. I'm told it's because I'm a girl. I feel pretty bad for how he's been doing lately and hope he finds peace. Jimmy Pop of the Bloodhound Gang. Just what you'd expect. He kissed me. It was weird. Those guys were and still are heroes to me. They got to make a living by being gross, having fun, and making people laugh. I have horrible depression and other issues, and their work has helped me through many slow days. Wish I could say Louis C.K., but he didn't do autographs or meet the crowd after the show. He has his own life, though, and seeing him live was great on its own. I don't do big venues for comedy, so I probably won't ever meet him. Oh well. Thank you for watching. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to give it a thumbs up, subscribe, and hit the bell icon so you never miss an update.